Hello, everybody. It's Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols with the Tactical Fitness Report, and we are on this series. We are kicking its butt, and this series is on on all the body types that are preparing for some form of BUDS or Special Operations Selection Program. We've done swimming athlete. We've done the cross-country runner. Both of those bring great strengths and weaknesses to the table. We talked about how do we fix some of those weaknesses. Now, today, we're going to do what most of you probably want to see, at least from my emails that I've received, is that you guys want to see the powerlifting football player type of body person, person with that body type. How do they prepare for BUDS? Cool thing about that is that was me. So I'm going to talk about this in first person for sure. You know, and Jeff is very similar. He was a big powerlifting guy, you know, with some other great skill sets.
Some weird swimming skills, yeah.
Swimming skills and wrestling skills, you know, throughout his history. So which, you know, once again, those things can turn, you know, the typical weaknesses into less of a weakness, you know, and just make you a little more well-rounded. So anyway, we are still going to do the stupid question of the week. Segment. However, this one we'll save it to the end, and it will segue into our next topic.
One that's probably next in most demand, and we'll save that for the end. But we're trying to get some method to our madness here a little bit.
So we're moving in the right direction. And one, this series has been a lot of fun. I think it's probably been the most entertaining for me, as well as engaging for me, and really to kind of help individuals, you know, from my past who I've prepared, and Jeff's past who he's prepared, all their things that they've kind of gone through their journey from being one type of athlete and becoming a tactical athlete. So there you go. So with this one, Jeff, let's start it off. You're a high school, maybe even college level football player who during the off season, you're obviously in a periodization program where you're going to be lifting a lot of weights and sprinting, and there is no running, right? If they're running, they're probably running quarter mile max, you know, and anything over 100 yards is considered long distance to this group.
Yep.
Right. I've been there.
Yeah. We can lump in that football player, we can lump in there the shot putter, the discus, the hammer throwers. We can lump in there the power lifter type folks. You could lump in there some of the heavier wrestlers, even the heavyweights.
Sure.
The guys that maybe wrestle like 191 or whatever the weight classes are now currently, depending on the allowance that's given and such. But We got another couple other groups. Like we're purposely not lumping in the hockey, the rugby, lacrosse, and like a heavier fighter. We're going to save that for a different group later on. So we're not forgetting that.
Yes.
But those bring some similarities to this heavier, strong group, but they also bring some different similarities enough that we think we should segment them. So again, yeah, the football lineman, the heavier linebacker, the heavier, strong athlete, young athlete. Even some of the older athletes that are, you know, I say older, 25 to 35, that are, you know, former bodybuilder or something.
Right. So, there you go.
You know, here's the strengths. We'll start off with that. We'll go. So the obvious, if you will, strengths are that they're strong.
Yes.
they're really strong. They probably have the absolute strength, but they also probably have a quicker capacity to gain strength endurance.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, what does that mean? Like, okay, the guy can bench press heavy weight, for example, or squat heavier weight in comparison to his or her peers, but they also will be able to get more pushups sooner than somebody because they've got them. We got to manipulate some of that muscle fiber, get some power and speed in there a little bit more. So that's certainly a strength to them.
Yeah.
And then, Maybe another strength for them is that, you know, I'll let Stu kind of maybe jump in, but we could talk about maybe some of the intangibles that are difficult to measure in those strength athletes is that there's, for me, one of the things I'll say is someone that's typically pretty strong all the time, that willingness to thrust themselves into that competitive sort of strength training world, that training world tends to be a little bit easier to convince them. Maybe like if someone has spent a lot of time in the weight room or resistance exercises and training, when you transition them into that decathlete type training, they tend to take to it pretty quickly.
Take to it quickly. I would say they're also very, very competitive. You know, not that these other athletes aren't competitive, but they're definitely competitive on a strength, muscle endurance level. Like they will tend to care more about their bench presses and their squat scores than their, you know, and their pull-ups and push-up scores than they will about their swim and run times. So obviously that we'll talk about that weakness on the back end of this one, but I would have to say this: mental toughness for these type of athletes is pretty high, especially the football player, the guys that are getting banged up all the time, having to play with pain, having to be in a pretty decent state of discomfort, not necessarily physical, like endurance discomfort, like the runner and the swimmer get, but just painful, gritty discomfort. You know, that is the football lineman. That's the football player who's putting on a set of sweaty pads a second time of the day for two a days. You know, it's those are type of little things that, you know, being able to play with pain and being able to distinguish, and this is a big one, being able to distinguish pain from injury.
Yeah.
Because there are people who will quit buds thinking they are injured, and really all they are is just in pain.
Yeah. There's a post a day or two ago on the Only Easy Day Instagram page that had a picture of someone sitting in the back of a truck, and Richard, the photographer, the moderator was like, is he hurt or is he injured? What do you guys think? And I remember that, and I remember that occasion for whatever reason. He certainly wasn't injured. We were running. We were doing a full 4 mile run. Like, oh my God, my leg hurts. I can't do it. Just not used to being uncomfortable. That's really what it came down to, and his unwillingness to push through it and find an excuse. So am I speaking to the quality of his character? Most certainly not.
No.
But we're just saying that that's the nature of buds. 90% of the people that quit buds aren't 95, we'll say. I don't know. They're not injured. They're just unwilling to endure.
Yeah, and they're in pain.
They're in pain.
But not injured.
There's
a fine line. There's a fine line there, and I think the football player athlete learns that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, too, is like the football player is probably the most prominent example we can use. But we also look at one of the intangibles I see is like that teamwork aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Of, now, if you're talking pure powerlifting and stuff, not so much team-oriented. But a world-class powerlifter type guy or someone that does it competitively is training with like-minded individuals. That's where their training is. So that exists. That, hey, someone's going to hold you accountable. Why weren't you at the gym today? We had to squat today. Well, like, it doesn't work. It does. That stuff doesn't fly. Like, you're going to be there. Your training partners depend on you. And especially when you're enduring that much stress and load, you need a spotter, typically.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So
and a coach. You need to be able to listen to a coach.
For sure.
You know, being able to handle the feedback a coach gives you and communication skills and all those things. You know, so it, you know, I think a lot of these athletes bring all of that to the table. You know, really depending on what athlete you are.
Yeah. I think, there's, again, and this is where you guys too, especially in the feeds of YouTube, which I think this is a bit of a nice open dialogue. If we miss things or overlook things, put them in the comments box and go, hey guys, what about this? Because so many people are reading them, not just us. But this is a good opportunity for you guys to go, hey, I think this really helped me, you know, in team sports, or I didn't like this. I'd like to hear your guys' feedback too. And I know Stu would as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Hey, how about this one that we didn't really touch on in the previous two? But it's definitely a weakness in the previous two, but it's not a weakness in this one, is speed and agility.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have future tests that may be shuttle runs or, you know, cone drills or beep tests or anything like that, this athlete can handle that one.
Yeah.
Pretty well. Whereas, have you ever given a shuttle run to a swimming athlete?
They can't stop. It's like a baby giraffe on the turnaround.
It's very funny. It's very funny, especially if you have a football player next to him. And
literally a fish out of water.
That's
the thing, too, is like from a training standpoint, again, we're not speaking necessarily – we're not coming across hopefully as like, well, no, this is an absolute and we're favoring any side or other. Mm. But we're just kind of laying out to you guys, like, there is, like right now, especially the command I came from, one of the tests is a 300-meter shuttle, three times a repeater. 300 three times. It's a marker. It's been a very successful marker in kind of determining whether or not someone's going to be able to handle that physical training load. So, and it's being widely used in a lot of places. I think the DEA and FBI use it too, if I'm not mistaken.
They have elements of shuttle runs in their program. The Naval Academy uses a much smaller one. It's almost like a pro agility. It's so short.
Okay. I mean,
it's like 120-foot shuttle run.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, 10 yards back four times.
Yep.
Just another leg bigger than the pro agility. But like I said, I gave it that test the other day to two swimmers and a football player. I was like, oh my God, it almost lapped them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that fast. Yep. And this is like a 7-second test.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, the football player is breaking six. You know, and, you know, the swimmer's hitting nine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it goes beep and beep, you know, whenever you're watching it, or I say timing it, but it is night and day, the difference, you know. So so they bring that kind of ability to the table as well, which we'll go into some of the weaknesses. This strength helps with some of those weaknesses as well, because you don't have to build a foundation of strength. You know, their bones and muscles are already strong enough. Probably the bigger thing that we have to worry about is maybe body mass to help them reduce some of that body mass so they can be a little faster.
Yeah. And that's where kind of the strength, literal and figuratively, can become a source of a weakness, because it is a lot to carry. And, you know, again, if we're looking at the training side, someone with those motor function development skills of being able to change direction very quickly, because that's what those beep tests are testing. It's dynamic deceleration and then dynamic acceleration and changing direction. So you're looking at those guys, you're going to see that those guys have been exposed to that stuff, or they're going to do very well at the obstacle course, right?
Yeah.
But they're going to have a difficult time doing the 4-mile run if they don't train it. So, yeah, transitioning into those weaknesses is that, you know, you're going to find guys that are 200, 220, 230 that don't have difficult running, but they because they've trained it. But also, again, kind of wrestlers tend to fit in that world. We'll get to that later on, where they're just kind of like they're a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah.
They can freaking go forever.
Yeah.
And you can beat the hell out of them, and they're just like, whatever.
Yeah,
they can run forever and they're strong.
They can do really well at buds if they can swim.
If they can swim.
That's the big
that's it. The great equalizer. We covered that, yeah. So, you know, that weakness is that typically, because if you have a misproportionate strength advantage, we'll call it, you're going to have a misproportionate endurance disadvantage. So everything that the cross-country guy had as an advantage is in his weakness is that we just flip-flop the two.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's where, so we talked about the biggest, I think maybe the biggest overarching weakness then is that we talked about before with the track athlete or the cross country athlete, where it pretty quickly they can get stronger.
Yes.
Whereas somebody that's really strong, it takes them much, much longer proportionately to a cross country athlete getting stronger for them to get more, a much improved aerobic base.
Yes.
I guess that's really a lot of words I threw in there, but
yeah.
When someone comes to Stu and I and says, hey, I'm 250 pounds, I was a former college football player, I want to go to Bud's. I'm 24 years old. Stu and I are going, well, I really hope that you allotted at least a year.
Yes. And a year is good.
Yeah, you know, or 10 months.
Yeah, you can give yourself a great transition in a year for the powerlifter. We have a guy right now that was a lineman in college. He is now down to like 220, you know, when he was playing at 290. And he's hanging with all the guys up front now on the run. So he has brought it up. But it took a good year to get to that level. And now we're about to get into this winter lift cycle in which he is really – prone to picking up weight very quickly and strength very quickly. That's just the way he's built. Yeah. And so we're going to pull back on his lifting, maybe start, and maybe instead of doing a 5x5, I may just have him do one or two of those sets, and then we're just going to go do cardio or TRX stuff for the rest of the hour and then go swim, you know, instead of having him pick up the poundage, you know, pick up the weight and gain weight. Now my cross country guy, my swimmer guy, they're going to be staying in there for all five sets, doing all five rounds of that workout, getting stronger, trying to pick up 10 or 15 pounds of weight, you know, and some pure strength as well. So that's kind of the difference. And when you have multiple groups of guys all in the same room doing the same workout, if you're the trainer, you're going to have to, or if you're doing it by yourself, you're going to have to think a little bit and say, is this going to really benefit me for where I need to be? You know, and if the answer is no, because you're already there, you're already good at these things, maybe we focus more on the weakness and not do something that's going to pull away from some of your gains that you've made on a weakness.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, if hopefully you guys are starting to pick up to where if you have, and that's where, you know, that's where Stu and I will admittedly say our own training program, the biggest weakness for our programs is that there is such a diversity of individual trying to get to the end state of ready for Bud's.
Right.
And for someone that looks at a barbell and gets bigger and stronger, right? We don't want them to get into hypertrophy too much.
Right.
Right. We want to get more into speed and power and endurance for them, because if you do it right, if you do the speed, power, endurance right, what you're going to see is the guy that went from 290 to 220, he's probably, honestly, he's not any weaker.
Still fast and powerful.
Super strong. So, like, again, I had a lineman from ODU, same thing. He was 300 pounds, got him to 270, 250. He reps 225 now more than he ever did when he was 300. Yeah. Now, can he – is his single rep as high?
No.
Not quite.
Yeah.
But now, again, it's that proportionate work volume is so much higher. Because it's like, yeah, I could bench press 400 pounds before, but I could only do 225 for 8. Now he can bench 345, but he does 225 for 17.
Right.
That for me is far more valuable in the tactical population than a single bout.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially, let me say that, specifically for training for a selection and assessment program.
Yes.
You know, when you get later on as a senior operator, you can do what you want.
Right.
And it's not going to hinder you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't do any cardio really in the teams at all. Except because I was deployed so frequently, walking in the mountains of Afghanistan for four months or 8 months a year. That was my cardio. Like, I never detrained.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Point. So like, that's where without my, I was like, I'll be fine. I'll be good. I just had to make sure I didn't get too heavy.
Right.
Right.
That's where a lot of these guys kind of make their mistakes too, because they see the kind of workouts that you're doing. There's videos up there about active duty SEALs and special ops guys working out, and they're huge.
Yeah.
They are jacked, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, because, you know, some of their missions are going to be rucking, or it's going to be hopping off a helicopter, running up a flight of steps and coming back in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
Now, I will say, like, there are points and times where I had to check myself. And I was like, you know what, I'm getting a little bit too sluggish. Because when you're gone so much, as you know, and this really speaks to firefighters, in my opinion, police officers.
Absolutely.
They never get a step away from their work. So, and you'll see, like, sometimes, like, I get that a lot. I get a lot of, like, older firefighters, say older, you know, in the mid-30s. And police is like, man, I just need to become more athletic. A guy I've become started, I met Juan when I did a tactical strength conditioning course. He's a police officer in Chesapeake. Big, strong dude. And we just had to get him more athletic. And now he's like, man, he's just as strong as he's ever been. We just got him a little more athletic. And he's like, man, I just feel better.
And, you know, that's really what we're doing with the cross-country kid, too, and the swimmer. You know, they can still swim and kick butt on land running. But now, they get them under a pull-up bar, and they're doing 100 reps workouts of pull-ups as a warm-up. You know, not in one set, but multiple sets. You know, they're able to handle that kind of volume.
Yep. They recover so fast.
Yeah.
And that's, that's where the weakness is like – with a big strong guy is they can just be really strong. Like let's call it the 225 pound bench press. This would be a better, if I was running a testing for the NFL combine, this is what I would do. I'd do 225 pounds max reps and I would see how long it takes them. I'd give them a 3-to-1 work to rest ratio and repeat it.
Yep.
That would be the test. That's the biggest problem with big guys is they don't do well on repeat bouts of strength because they don't recover as well as, like you're saying, a cross-country guy, man. He'll knock out 100 pull-ups once he gets his strength because he comes off the bar, arms tired, but his aerobic system is so good.
Yep.
He's ready to go again in another minute.
Yep.
You know, and that's where another big weakness for somebody that's really strong is they don't recover very well. But once you teach them to recover well, all of a sudden, man, you're like, you become a PT monster. Absolutely. And that's what I did. I could just all day do pull-ups.
And you can be huge. You can be big, and your muscles are still recovering quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, a good way to test it that is we used to do a thing long before there was a Murph. And we'll get into CrossFit workouts too. We'll get into a CrossFit athlete doing this, but the Murph, the classic 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and instead of 300 squats, we just did 300 sit-ups because those were the three testing elements of the PST. And so our goal was to do those in as few sets as possible, right? And there were big guys that are able to do this 4-5 sets, you know, two minute bouts. Four or five sets, you know, and that was a really good sign that if you can do that in as few sets as possible and get in the 4 and 5 range, you know, your muscles are recovering quickly, no matter what.
Even though you're still putting the work in,
and you're putting it all in. Yeah. Yep. And you're not resting. You're going to be resting with another exercise too.
Yeah.
So while you're doing pull-ups, you're resting from push-ups and abs and vice versa.
Exactly.
Right. And I tell you what, we had one guy who could do it in three sets. I mean, 35 pull-ups, three times, back to back to back within about a 15-minute time period, you know, that they're done with that test. And it was incredible. It's amazing what the human body can do. And, you know, one, with pure strength, with two, endurance, and three, with just muscle stamina and recovery, right? But you don't have to be perfect at all of those. You just need to be really good at all of them. And I would say this, if you're going to be really good at one of them, have that be the muscle stamina and the ability to recover.
Agreed.
Quick.
For all these athletes.
For everything.
That's really the goal for all these people.
That's the goal. Yeah. Yep.
It's how much work volume can you take on? Take a short rest period and then do it again.
Yeah.
That's the best way I feel like I can define where if all these body types get to that nucleus, what we get is longevity. We get fatigue resistance. And most importantly, we get injury resistant.
Yes.
Those are the three. And that's if you have those three things going into BUDS or SFAS or Police Academy or Fire Academy, really – Then we're kind of left, like we soon are talking about, is we're kind of left to acts of God at that point. Like somebody, something falling or somebody bumping into you and tripping and twisting your ankle and stuff like that. Because the likelihood of you getting hurt under normal physical, we'll call them normal physical activity.
Or failing anything.
Yeah. It's pretty slim to none.
Right.
And so let's jump into this. Let's go, okay, we'll give just kind of a brief overlay of, okay, if you are that football player, that big, strong guy, what should my training cycle look like? We know we've kind of already talked about the periodization in some of our videos, but you know, my first step with a big guy is go, well, okay, with everybody, it's like, well, what are your PST numbers? So we have your size and your age and your athletic experience. We take a look at your PST numbers, and typically it's going to be pretty good on the push-ups, pretty good on the pull-ups, okay on the sit-ups.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, if they're, we'll just say typically not the best run in swim times, not terrible, but probably okay in the water, but their run times are going to be like 12 minutes or 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Just to complete it. So for me, I'm going to make sure, first of all, again, it's difference too, is like if it's a 300-pound lineman that really could lose 40 pounds of fat kind of thing, right, or 30 pounds really, right, of fat mass, that's a little bit different. But also it's like, okay, before I can get them to strength endurance, I need to give them some more aerobic capacity. So I am, this is the point where I'm going to go, we need to put some miles in.
Yep.
Not in, again, but that's not like, okay, we're going to start off with 20 miles this week or 40. We are going to build to that before we even start addressing anything that's really strength endurance based.
Yeah.
For the next 3 or 4 weeks minimum, probably all the way out to 6 weeks, our focal point is going to be become make you just, you're going to have to like stick that brick on the gas pedal and just endure it. Yeah. While you're riding the brake.
Yeah.
You're just gonna
I would agree 100%. And, you know, I would even probably, I would say, you know what? We're not even going to touch a weight for the next, maybe even 6 to 12 weeks, depending on the person and how much his progression is going. And it's a progressive running cycle, maybe not even run every day, but you're going to be doing a lot of swimming.
Running and swimming, riding bikes, concept two rowers, Versa climbers, Versa pulleys, Jacob's ladders.
Yeah.
And also calisthenics.
A lot of calisthenics.
Yep.
You're going to do a PT program.
That's basically like you're basically your 12-week buds prep that you have that's primarily calisthenics and running.
That's all it is.
That's what I would be having prescribing my big guys to do.
Yeah. Because, it is a grinder PT workout. I mean, pretty much those things are right from the grinder. You're going to be doing pull-ups and dips and a lot of flutter kicks and, you know, all these little things that are just wear you down because, you know, your inability to recover. But as soon as you get good at those and you're able to recover fast, you're ready to roll again. Next set, bring it on.
Yep. And you know, you closely monitor that 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, because at some point you're going to find out one thing. Let's say that this person is motivated and his intent is there. Like, you can't make up for somebody that's kind of like, but right. this person is like, yes, he's going to do it. So, you know, at 6 weeks, we're going to look at it and go, hey, or even 3 weeks, honestly, go, how are things progressing? Like, yeah, it was a pretty rough first 10 or 12 days, but now I'm starting to feel better, you know, week three. And then at week four, and you're like, just kind of like I'm a little bit sluggish. So we might tweak some of the running a little bit.
Yep.
Right? And then we just start keep tweaking. But at some point, you know, you might find out at week eight, hey, this guy's ready to really hit the pavement. Let's get some track workouts in there. Let's extend his miles. Let's do a 5-mile run. Let's do some tempo Indian run type stuff. Some fartlek stuff. Like, let's get in there and like, let's get this guy running.
Yeah, absolutely. Bleacher runs, hill runs.
Yep.
One thing I love to do with the powerlifting body is run and leg PT. No weights. You're just going to run a lap and you're going to do squats and lunges.
Yep.
Run a lap, squats and lunges, just with your body weight.
Yep.
And you know, you're just going to build muscle endurance. Because the two things I would say that happen to this type of runner is you're going to fatigue in your lungs or your legs.
Yep.
That's pretty much everybody, but you'll definitely feel it in your, you'll feel it in your legs if you're a bigger guy.
Yeah. And this is also when we're talking about, now I'm going to talk about rucking and load carriage. Now, I don't want my 260-pound guy rucking heavy rucks. I want him rucking 15, 20, 25 pounds over a moderate distance, 2, maybe 3 miles fast. Yeah. Without running, just move out.
I will say this. If you're 275 pounds, you have a ruck on you already.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, because if I'm at 220, that means I'm wearing a 50-pound ruck.
Yep.
Right? And if your goal is to get – you're 50 pounds overweight. You know, so, yeah, very light ruck at a maximum. You know, yep, you know, I've had some guys just, you know, you're rucking, but you're not going to carry anything because he's 310 pounds.
This, yeah.
You know, it makes no sense.
This is how I, this is exactly how I prescribe it for my guys. And it's as much as it is a baseline as it is a test or a start of training. I say, hey, pick a 2 mile course at 20 pound rucksack and you're going to walk it as fast as you can. I don't care what time, don't go for a time. You're going to take note of the time. I want you to walk it as fast as you can. And they do. Let's say it comes back, because the average person is going to be able to walk a rucksack somewhere between around 13 to 14 minutes, maybe. Someone that's really talented, they're going to do around 11.
Yep.
About 11 if they're really fast. And so let's say they come back at that 2 miles, and they're let's say it's 30 minutes. And I go, you're going to do that once every 3 days. Especially because the running is just going to be tough for these big guys.
Yes.
But rucking does it make sense. But you go, well, if we put 15 pounds only on your back, maybe 20. And then next time you do it, the same weight, because we haven't changed the weight, you're going to do the same course. But you have to beat it by 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So even if you're like, holy shit, here comes the end, I might have to like
start
kind of shuffle to finish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get it again and go, all right, next time you're going to beat it by 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you just start, and it's not beat it by 30 seconds every time. You actually do the opposite. I go, beat it by 30, beat it by 25, beat it by 20, beat it by 15, beat it by 10. And they're doing that every 3 to 4 days. Before you know it, they've just covered really good miles without putting a tremendous amount of stress, because we're only going up 15 pounds.
Right.
But now this is all saying like, hey, they've got their portion control and their fork under control as well.
Yeah, that's the other side of the equation that we didn't have to touch on with the other guys, because we want them eating as much as they were doing when they were running and swimming.
Yeah.
Now we're applying lifting to it, and they're going to put on muscle mass.
Yeah.
We're doing just the opposite. We're doing just the opposite with this guy.
Because someone that's 250 will say he or she has been eating for someone that's 250 pounds.
Right.
Now, I don't want you to eat like for someone that's 150. You shouldn't go from 2,800 calories to 1,500 calories. You will shut down.
Yeah.
Basically, you would go for an, again, like a dietitian is probably going to recommend maybe a 500-calorie deficit if they're smart. Like most sports dietetics are going to go probably 200.
Yeah.
But they typically, from my experience, what I've seen, a sports dietitian – isn't going to take away more than 500 the first time. And then after that, there won't probably take another 500 away. It'll be like 150 after running that for a month.
Yeah. One of the advantages these athletes have too, though, like many that I have known, the 280-pound nose guard, the 290-pound lineman, is they've had to eat so much food to maintain that weight.
Yeah.
That they're almost looking forward to not having to eat that
eat
much.
So much, yeah.
You know, and they eat like a normal person, and they drop 50 pounds in 6 months.
And they actually got, weirdly enough, they're like, holy crap. You mean, because you know, the Denver Broncos were synonymous with doing this years ago. They transitioned from the 300-plus pound lineman to the 270s.
Wow.
And they become more athletic. And quite frankly, the 270-pound guys were stronger. So now the trend – now you still get 300-pound linemen, but typically now in the NFL, they're looking more at like, hey, let's – that strength-to-weight ratio needs to be there, not just weight.
Right, right.
So then – but then you have the absolute freaks that are 315 and just crazy strong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a lineman last year that got drafted by – I think he was from University of Colorado, and he was like 6'8". Like 315, but he was literally carrying only like 18% body fat.
Yeah,
like
he had a six pack. He ran a 40 and something ridiculous.
Yeah, like 4.8 or something silly. Like there are some freaks out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jake Long was like that too, I think.
Oh, okay.
Before he blew both his knees out, but he's still just a total freak. But anyway, so that's kind of, I think Stu and I are on the same page of that, is like, because, like, let's say Stu gets a guy right now because his phase of training primarily is going to shift because his cycle is like, hey, let's look a little bit more weights. But he's already said, well, if I get a big offensive lineman or defensive lineman, while these guys are doing their resistance training cycle, we're going to do some high-intensity work and some cardio work with some calisthenics.
Yeah.
Right on. Like, we don't we don't need this guy adding more muscle just yet.
No.
We need to sacrifice that, you know, and really have that conversation about caloric intake. But
Yeah, most of them, that gives you guys. Yeah, here's a good point about the caloric intake, because like I said, most of them are wanting to eat less. You know, if they just eat like a normal human being, they're going to drop 50 pounds pretty quickly. If, however, they're in a habit of eating like that, and that's just what they know, that's why you see so many retired football players that are, you know, 350 pounds plus, you know, is that they just never stopped eating like when they played football.
Yeah, like when they were 300 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really hard habit to break for some. It's real easy. And then you see a lineman who played, you know, 10 years ago, and now he's, you know, 215, 220, you know, when he played at 300, you know, that's not typical, right? So the guys that are trying to get into Buds need to be that guy, need to be the guy that can slow down instead of eating 6,000 calories to maintain a 300 pound body. They're eating 2,800, 2,500 to maintain a 220 pound body.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is quantity of food does not define quality. Because it's because if you have, let's say you're using a 3,000 calorie diet, and they're pretty, it's most of it's refined food. It's you're going to actually poo and pee most of it out, a lot of it out, a fair True. Majority of it out. It's just going to become waste product.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like I can still put on muscle and make a body weight at under 3,000 calories, because the 2,800 to 2,500 calories I'm getting, it's all getting used.
Good quality. Yeah.
I'm not eating potato chips and a lot of refined foods and these. Now I like them. I'm not demonizing them.
Yeah.
Like I do, like, shoot, man, I had a little, like my son last night, I had two Oreos. Why? Because I like Oreos and I want to. I don't care.
Yes.
But my point is like the vast majority, like 95% of my food that I ate yesterday, I'm not in caloric surplus. I'm just eating really high quality foods, and I know it's being used for muscle repair and brain health and joint health. I'm not eating 2,500 calories of waste in a 3,500 calorie diet.
Right.
So it's by design. I am purposely eating fat and purposely eating sugar and doing these sort of things by design, but I don't have to make this big transition, because I'll put on a pound of body weight probably every 2 months, a month and a half. And that my body can handle it easily.
Right.
And I don't slow down at all. I'm still swimming and running as fast as I ever really have at this body weight. So I'm actually as heavy as I've ever been right now. So I'm staying right now over 240. I've never done that.
That's incredible. Cause I was as heavy as I've ever been last year, about 15 months ago. I was 225. And I was strong.
How tall are you?
Right,
are you 6'1"?
Six feet.
Okay,
just a
bit over me. Okay,
yeah. And I was I was stronger than I've been in decades, because we went through a heavy powerlifting cycle. But then the spring came around, and I couldn't drop that weight as easy as I did. Now because I'm over 40, that's probably the main reason. And so I had to really focus on my diet, drop that. And, you know, this second weight cycle coming around, I actually did what I'm going to do with my power lifters and my heavy guys. I just did one or two sets of the weight training, and then went into the cardio room and just ran on the treadmill or did the bike, or maybe instead of doing weights, I did the TRX version of that exercise. And now I'm about 210. And trying to get a little closer to 200, because here's one reason why for me, and this is for you older guys listening, is that I was heavy as I've ever been and stronger than I've been in a very long time, but all of my blood numbers were really bad. I had high blood pressure. I had triglyceride issues. I had bad cholesterol issues. And now it's all cleared up because I've dropped those 15 pounds. And I didn't need to take medication. Like my doctor said, oh, just take this pill.
Yeah, hell
no. No, okay.
Yeah.
So I had to drop a little bit of weight. So
yeah, I get my blood work next week done. But also, too, and the same thing, I know that's coming for me. at some point, which is why I'm swimming a lot more than I once did, because I'm probably not ever, I like to ruck like in the mountains and stuff, but I'm probably never going to be like the guy that's like jogging around the neighborhood. I don't find enjoyment in it like I used to, and it hurts at 240 pounds.
It does hurt.
So, but man, in the pool, I feel good.
Oh,
I feel great.
Yeah.
And, but that's just cause I'm used to, and I'm efficient, and it's quiet for me. So anyways, so hopefully you guys get a real overview of in summary for me about all this is just for this is kind of universal across all the spectrums of athletic body types, but specifically for the bigger guys, you got to be patient.
Yes.
Take your time, be patient.
A little more time.
Because for you to exercise, for lack of a better term, or showcase your strengths, you really have to be okay, or you have to know that proper aerobic development isn't going to take away from your overall strength, really. It's not going to make you weak and skinny. Like, if you're a big dude, you're never going to be – if you're 250-pound lineman, you're never going to be a 150-pound dude unless you're going through chemo. Right. Yeah. Like my dad, when he passed away, it's in his 70s, when he thought he hurt his back playing golf, but he had a tumor. He was 200 pounds at like 68. He was a big farm kid. He was never going to be, well, after, you know, years of chemo, when he died, he was probably 135. But that's an extreme scary case. I'm not trying to be morbid, but my point is that, like, again, that was at the body dysmorphia, the big guy is like, oh my God. Like, I'm small. I'm like, no, you're 220 pounds.
Right.
You're big. Like, I don't see myself as a big person. Like, I don't. But I'm not stupid. 240 pounds is on a 5'10", 5'11 frame is a big guy.
That's big. Yeah.
Like, and
powerful.
And so I know that. Like, I'm wearing 3XL shirts.
Right.
I don't feel like I'm 3XL. So, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I got to stop this because getting clothes is expensive.
Getting big.
But my point is that you guys, for you big guys, know this. This is my point of encouragement, is get in the endurance, find something you enjoy doing, because you're going to find that you can do both really well. Same with the cross country guys. Hey, get in there and get stronger. You're not going to run slower.
No. Well, let's say this. I will say this. You're not going to run that much slower. You're not going to lift that much less weight.
Yeah.
But you won't be at your one rep max. You won't be at your sub 5 minute mile pace.
You don't need either of those.
But you don't need either one of them. You know. Yeah. So, you know, here's a great email question. Hey, you know, I like your PT program and your running and swimming, but I'm afraid I'm going to lose all my gains. Right. You know, what are you looking for? You know, do you want to be a power lifter when you go to Buds? That's fine. But
you will fail.
Last I checked, there's no bench press contest at Buds.
No.
You know, so.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I guess from the command I came from, there was a.
Yes, there was.
The legacy test there, it's a 5 mile run. It's a pull up with a 45-pound plate. And then it's bench press at 225. Or no, it's body weight, I think. I was at 225, which is why I did it.
There. Yeah, I think it is universal. It is 225. Yeah, it's like the pro.
It is. And then it's combine. A 300-meter shuttle. And there was one other thing. It wasn't a swim, but there was four or five events. I remember. But my point is like, it can be a valuable test.
Yeah.
Given the certain circumstances or whatever. But again, me bench pressing, I bench pressed 225 for 49 reps this year. I wanted to do 52 because 52 is the NFL combine record.
That is freaking crazy.
So I did 49 this year, legitimately 49, because that's more valuable, because I don't think that I can bench press 450. I don't think that I can.
Wow.
I did 385 for six.
Impressive.
But that's more valuable to me than bench pressing 500 pounds. Woo. Like I was joking around with Bert Soren at Sornex. Is like, cause I actually missed the NFL combine this year for a reason. Cause I was like, I'm going to break the NFL combine record at 39 years old at 220.
Nice.
Because the record was set by someone that was 296. Right. He was a lineman from Oklahoma State. I did it 52 reps. And I was like, okay, I think I can do that.
That is impressive.
I just wanted to do it. But so that's the value, guys. Like, we want your body weight. We want you to be able to bench press your body weight for 15 reps.
Yes.
Or yeah, your we want you to be able to bench press your body weight 1.5 times your body weight for 10.
Right.
Right. But we want a guy that's 220 pound. We want them to run a sub 9 minute.
Mile and a half. Yep.
Right. We want everyone to be able to swim a sub 9 minute, 500 meter.
Right.
So that's the idea. Just, you can stay at 200. So Dan Green, we had a guy this year. He pulled 967 2 weeks ago at under 220. Wow. It raw. So he pulled Dr. Deadlift. I forget his name.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Yeah.
He pulled. Wow. 967 at 220 pounds.
That's insane.
So
yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing too. You know, these guys, you know, once again, I don't want to lose my gains. You know, they're afraid they're going to lose their gains at a 600 deadlift, right? You know, there's no need to do a 600 deadlift right now.
Right. Yeah. You know? But if you can do 400 pounds for 15, it's all you need.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's it. You like, know? And that's kind of where, that is where I focus my training on my athletes, and I know you do too, and myself, and I'm like, well, I don't want RM typically. Not that there's not value. There is value in the powerlifting world, but in the tactical space, I don't see that. I see 3 to 5 rep maxes.
Yeah.
I see, because I want reproducible strength, but I also want reproducible endurance.
Yes.
Like, I want to be able to run a 300 meter shuttle, you know, and I want to be able to do it under a minute. I want to rest a minute and do it again.
Yeah.
And then when I really challenge myself, I want to rest a minute and do it again.
Ooh, third one.
If you can do it 3 times.
Yeah, that's a gold standard.
If that's the test right there. Yeah. If you can do 3 100 meter repeaters or 300 meter repeaters 3 times.
Yeah.
That's serious. Yeah, so that's if you want to test yourself, folks, do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one. So I would say in my conclusion of the strength guy, the football player guy is, and it really, once again, like Jeff did, kind of a universal trait of what's going on here as we go through all these different athletic histories and body types, is that you're going to have to give up a little bit of something that you were really good at in order to make a weakness less of a weakness and make it more of a strength. All right. Otherwise, it's hard to do all of them. I mean, you can't be a 270-pound guy deadlifting 600 and running, you know, sub-9-minute mile and a halves.
Yeah.
You know,
I only know one person that can do that. One.
You might be able to do it once,
yep.
But you're not going to run 4-mile timed runs in 27 minutes. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just – there's just so many different areas that, you know, you need to – to focus on versus just the strength and the speed and agility for the strength guy and the eating, you know, so you got to pull back a little bit on that and then be a little lighter, you know. And then the cool thing is this, and this comes from my background. I didn't lift weights for almost 2 years, you know, cause I was a competitive power lifter and football player. And then I went to rugby, which that was a good transition. That helped me transition a little bit easier, and it made the whole process of going from powerlifting football player to rugby player to buds candidate a lot easier. It was a good transition for me. But I didn't lift any weights for a couple of years, and all I did was run, PT, swim, and that was it. Maybe ride some bicycles. So I was actually training for a triathlete. And when I went back to my lifting cycle, it took me about 6 weeks to get back to my run rep maxes that I did 2 years ago. You know, so,
you know, got it. Yeah. With all that training, you're going to revert to what your nervous system was developed under.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's why we're saying runners, man. If you're a good runner.
Yeah. You're typically going to always be a good runner.
Unless
even if you start smoking,
still be able to run. Crazy, man. like silliness.
I won't ever forget some of the SEALs back in the 90s and 80s that could smoke and just kick everybody's ass running. I was like,
wait a minute.
What is happening?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing is like the human body is fascinating and it will surprise you.
Yeah. So, all right. So, we ready for our next segment?
Our stupid question of the week.
We don't have any sponsors yet, but. Here's a great here's Killcliff.
Killcliff, right? Yeah.
It's a good recovery drink.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So yeah, I've got Monster. So we'll call it one, and it's, you know, 6-1, half dozen the other.
Hey, you know, we don't have a sponsor yet, but hey, you never know what may happen. This might be a good time. This podcast is brought to you by Killcliff.
Killcliff, exactly.
The stupid question of the week. I had a couple of them, and I think this one is a good segue into what we're going to talk about on the next segment. And the next segment, we're going to talk about the CrossFitter, right? Who wants to go to Buds? Nothing wrong with the CrossFitter. Typically, the CrossFitter is a former athlete that goes into CrossFit and likes the competition of daily fitness. We're not bashing CrossFit at all in this next segment. In fact, in this next podcast, in fact, there's some great tangibles and intangibles the CrossFitter brings to the table. However, there are some things that they obviously have weaknesses on that if they ignore, they will last about as long as a high intensity interval training workout when they show up on their first day at Buds.
Yeah.
So anyway, the question was, hey Stu, I'm a avid CrossFitter. And I'm preparing for Buds. Is this going to be adequate for my preparation?
Yeah, we can work just so we know we're not dinging on the CrossFit thing too. Kick that dead horse. Is like we equally get the same email and just replace the word CrossFit with powerlifter or cross country and
swimmer.
The swimmer, like that's what they like. Hey, I'm a competitive swimmer and I do gymnastics. Is this going to be enough for me? Should I do something else? The dumb question is more like I don't know where as a society we've gotten off the idea of like training in one genre of performance will prepare us for
everything.
Yeah. Being diversity is key, and I think that's why it falls into the dumb question, because it's not about CrossFit. We're using the word CrossFit to transition to the next segment. It's not about CrossFit necessarily, but the dumb question is that training one modality or one plane of movement or one sport specifically overall. And that's where, again, this doesn't even have to be about tactical. Right? Like the NFL Combine in the last 4 years, because one of the questions in the questionnaire for the NFL Combine is they ask the athletes, growing up, were you a single sport athlete or a multi-sport athlete? And I believe, if I remember the stats right, they average about 118 NFL players at the NFL Combine by invite each year. And their average is 4. Out of the 118, only 4 of them are single sport athletes.
Wow.
So that's the average. Now, sometimes lower, some, I think this year there was 2. But sometimes there are 6, right? So the average.
Most of those guys are such incredible athletes that they are the best in their hometown, in the history of their hometown, and they can play everything.
Yeah, like LeBron James was an All-American football tight end. Right. Derek Jeter was an All-American quarterback for Michigan, high school All-American. Wow. Let's see here. Who else? I mean, the list goes on and on of guys.
And even mediocre baseball players, you know, like we have some for the Orioles. Ryan Flaherty. Not many people know who he is, but he was an All-American track star in high school and college.
Yep.
You know, played 2 sports in college. And, you know, that kid was probably the best of everything in his hometown when he was a high school kid. I mean, and he's a mediocre baseball player.
I'm showing my age a little bit, but John Elway, maybe you guys have heard of him, maybe not.
Of course, yeah.
He was the first overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft by the Yankees, and it was the first overall draft pick by the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, Hall of Famer.
So it's pretty crazy, right? I guess like Aaron Judge with the Yankees this year is going to be Rookie of the Year.
Oh, man.
He didn't even play – really baseball. He went to Fresno State on a football scholarship and was just like dinking around with the baseball one day. And the coach was like, you want to come play? And he's like, yeah, now he's playing for the Yankees. He didn't even play college football.
Making so much more money,
you know? So anyway, so I guess the point is, ladies and gentlemen, is that we are hoping to show you that, explain to you that do everything.
Yeah,
if you love soccer, play soccer, but try something else. If you love to swim, swim, but do something else too. Even if it's just recreational.
Yep.
Do it.
Even at martial arts.
Oh yeah, that's such a huge fan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Muay Thai, because it's such body awareness. That's why you see historically, in my opinion, wrestlers, Jiu-Jitsu, and water polo. They have such good body awareness and control, and gymnasts do so well at Buds.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the standpoint of physical.
Yes.
They do well. So
physical abilities. Yeah, so I guess the short answer to this question is, you know, there's strength and diversity. You know, not that CrossFit isn't, they use a lot of different types of workouts. You know, so it is fairly diverse. However, I think it's duration of the, and I'm not going to go too much in this because we'll answer it in full in the next show. But there's no 30-minute gym workout that's going to prepare you for a day of SEAL training. That's how I'm going to sum that one up.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. You got to put in your time.
You got to put in your time. Doesn't matter if it's CrossFit. Doesn't matter if it's swimming only or running only or lifting only. You know, you got to put in your time doing all the elements of fitness. And we're talking about strength, power, endurance, muscle stamina, speed, agility, flexibility and mobility. You know, those are some other ones that, you know, are critical just for your, you know, injury prevention.
For sure. And then just managing the recovery based off those training programs too, like overrunning, overtraining, overdoing CrossFit, all overdoing anything. Right. Yeah. So that's what we're hopefully getting that down that road. But, we'll probably have to pump this thing out here. We'll go back and forth on our notes, but another couple of days we'll have that out for you guys.
All right. There we go. All right. So power lifter, football players, start running.
Start running. Yeah. Or swimming. Do a little bit of both too.
Get out of the weight room and go to the pull-up bar.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. That's all you need.
All right. Well, actually, I'll actually physically see you tomorrow.
Yes, that's right.
Cool. Cool, man. Well, I'll give you a shout, and I'll call you. It'll probably be around noon when I get up there.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, man. Take care.
See you.